From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in July at the Democratic National Convention, and that's when the Democrats will make it official. Someone will be their nominee to take on President Donald Trump in the November general election. The heavy favorite is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who has won the first three states and is trying to pile up an insurmountable delegate lead. But here's the sticky part. With still a relatively large group of candidates in the race, Sanders might not win enough delegates to clinch the nomination. If no one gets to 50%, the rules permit a kind of party squabble. In other words, it's possible that the Democrat who gets the most votes and the most delegates will not end up the party's nominee. At a recent debate in Nevada, NBC's Chuck Todd pressed the candidates to say whether that's okay with them. And I confess I was a bit surprised to see that every candidate said, yep, it's okay if the candidate who gets the most votes might not be the nominee. Everyone said that, of course, except for Senator Sanders. There's one school of thought that says the party should make a careful decision to nominate the candidate most capable of winning in November, even if it turns out it's not the candidate with the delegate lead. But if it certainly now seems plausible that the party could self-destruct if that happens, particularly if Sanders has the lead in delegates but is denied the nomination. His supporters are already suspicious of how they were treated in 2016. Can you imagine the reaction if this scenario plays out in July? Well, let's discuss it. And for Democrats who don't want Senator Sanders to be the nominee, the clock is seriously ticking now. The newest poll nationally shows Senator Elizabeth Warren climbing back into second in national polling. But can she win actual states? Is she positioned to make a run? Our guests this hour include two delegates for Senator Bernie Sanders. Robin Wilt is back with us. Nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
And Nicholas Wilt is here. Nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Marvin Stefferson's here, a delegate for Senator Elizabeth Warren. Welcome, Marv. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to mention at the outset here, listeners will certainly know Robin Wilt's name and may see Robin Wilt at various places around the community. She's running for Congress once again.
That is correct.
And in a primary election battle with incumbent Congressman Joe Morelli. And what I want to mention is this. We believe on this program in a couple of things when it comes to elections. We think it's important to have people who are running for office on the air really as much as is sort of reasonably possible, more and not less, because their voices are voices you ought to consider and you ought to know as much as you can about the candidates. That means being part of candidate interviews, of which we will sit down with Robin individually to talk about her candidacy separately. Of course, we will sit down with Joe Morelli to talk about his candidacy separately. We expect that there will be a debate as well.
Absolutely.
That we're working on scheduling. So these are all things that are going to be happening separately. But you often hear Joe Morelli on this program and on WXXI News talking about various issues. Robin Wilt's on talking about her support for Bernie Sanders today. It's a principle we hold very dear on this program, but we also do believe in equal time, and we hold ourselves to that standard. I hope that's fair.
That is fair, and I do just want to mention that I am also on the ballot as a Sanders delegate. So I am here in that capacity. I will be on the ballot on April 28th.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here. We appreciate
that. Thank you.
And setting aside the congressional candidacy, let's talk about what's going on the national stage here. First of all, I'd like to listen to what Chuck Todd and the candidates said, and I want to make sure we've got that clip because this was just about a week ago. This was in the Las Vegas and right before the Nevada caucuses, and this is how NBC closed the debate. My confession is that having listened and sort of observed most of it, I kind of had tuned out the last question. Usually the last question's like, what part of you is not perfect enough? And people are always like, well, I'm just too honest. You know, I'm too good of a person. It's sort of a softball, weird question. This was not the question and the answers I expected. And if you missed it, let's listen.
We are less than 2 weeks away from a national primary. And I want to ask all of you this simple question. There's a very good chance none of you are going to have enough delegates to the Democratic National Convention to clinch this nomination. Okay? If that happens, I want all of your opinions on this. Should the person with the most delegates at the end of this primary season be the nominee, even if they are short of a majority? Senator Sanders, I'm going to let you go last here because I know your view on this. So instead, I will start with you, Mayor Bloomberg.
Whatever the rules of the Democratic Party are, they should be followed. And if they have a process, which I believe
okay.
they do,
I'm trying to do
so
this,
that
yes,
everybody
to
else,
fast.
Everybody can...
So you want the convention to work its will?
Yes.
Senator Warren.
But a convention working its will means that people have the delegates that are pledged to them, and they keep those delegates until
so the leading
you come
person?
To the convention.
No?
All
okay.
of the people.
All righty. Vice President Biden?
Play by the rules.
Yes or no? Leading person with the delegates, should they be the nominee or not?
No, let the process work its way out.
Mayor Buttigieg?
Not necessarily, not to lose.
Senator Klobuchar?
Let the process work.
Senator Sanders?
Well, the process includes 500 superdelegates on the second ballot. So I think that the will of the people should prevail. Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Most votes should become the nominee.
Five no's and a yes.
All right, so we'll follow Chuck's rules there, and I'll start with Marv Stefferson, who's the delegate for Elizabeth Warren. Let's say that scenario happens, and it's July.
Right.
And Senator Sanders has the delegate lead, but not 50%. Should he be the nominee?
You know, that's the rules. And I think that you play by the rules, because when you start changing the rules, that's where it gets muddy.
So it's okay that at that point, since he doesn't have it clinched, that the party sorts it out and maybe chooses him, but maybe chooses someone else.
I'm with it, letting it play out. Like I said, I think the biggest problem we've seen lately in local politics is when the infighting in the party gets to the point where it's toxic. And so right now, you're looking at us trying to get to that magical number, right? One of the candidates inside the party get to that magical number. There may be something like Iowa wherein you say, okay, guess what? We are kind of close to each other, so why don't you convince your people to come over to my people to get me
it
to that number?
It becomes a national caucus. It went so well in Iowa.
Right. Right. Okay. And we saw that it didn't, and that's because they tried to address an issue on the fly.
So, listen, before I let the Wilts kind of weigh in here, let me just press a little bit on this.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand your concern about what can become sort of internecine toxicity in a party,
mm-hmm.
a party at war with itself. Is it possible that part of the problem for the Democrats, whether it was in Iowa, whether it is in these, sort of these committee meetings in which they're elevating certain candidates, is part of the problem that the people with the most votes don't always get selected? Is that actually part of the problem for the Democrats right now?
Yes, I would say yes.
I mean, Bernie Sanders won Iowa, even though Pete Buttigieg, in air quotes, won it because of a weird delegate allocation. Bernie Sanders got the most votes by thousands in Iowa, and some say that he didn't win it. Locally, we have – so I guess what I'm asking, Marv, is if you see the scenario play out, do you think the party could survive it?
Well, if we go back to Iowa, the problem was that they couldn't verify the count, the process. And so there came the question of who actually got the most votes, because there was a discrepancy on how they – so if it had been more clear – then I think everybody would have been a lot more accepting. But the fact that there was this whole mystery of the process working smoothly and it didn't. So now it's a matter of, did you actually, because they started bringing up who made the app. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. There were many different things. It was a bunch of Scooby-Doo henchmen running
out. Absolutely.
Iowa, which turns out to be a bad thing. But I don't think it's in doubt that Bernie Sanders got the most votes in Iowa. And the bottom line is, and if I sound like sort of a Sanders booster, I'm not. I'm just trying to be blunt about what
right.
I think could happen to the party. 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Sanders supporters felt aggrieved because they felt that the DNC was not even interested in actual national primary.
Right.
They felt
like it was a supporter of Sanders on that last one. So,
okay.
So I'm in a very precarious position because of the fact that I stepped for Warren on this one as opposed to Sanders. Again, I don't want to see what took place with Sanders on the last one happen again, because the people that didn't vote for him, they're still out there to vote again. And right now you have different candidates in the race. And what really plays for me as a voter for Sanders, or for Warren rather, is the issues that she's
all right.
You know, so,
so
that's
so the
that's
bottom line,
why
and we'll talk about this in a minute, but you're not you're not giving up on this as a done deal anyway, right?
Absolutely
now.
Not to I'm okay. A Marine. We never
saw. Robin Wilt, we will return at Marv's request to whether Bernie Sanders is going to lead in delegates. And I know you feel that he will, and the polls say that he probably will. But let's talk about what happens in July if this actually plays out here. What would happen to the Democratic Party if Bernie Sanders took a lead in delegates and then wasn't the nominee?
Well, I think we need to point out here the answers to those questions. And when Bernie Sanders answers that question, he talked about the will of the people. He's the only candidate that is on that stage who is talking about the will of the electorate, the will of the people. And in those first three contests, what we saw was Bernie Sanders got the popular vote in every single contest. That is actually unprecedented historically. Mm-hmm. And so somebody who's leading in the number of votes that were cast is all of a sudden being questioned as the front runner. And I think that is because of the challenge that he presents for the establishment, because he has been running a campaign that is talking about the will of the people and not the political elite. And when you look at the number of people who are actually in the Democratic Party, as opposed to the number of people who are delegates or the number of people who are officially members of the party, we're talking about two very different things. In Monroe County, we have almost 1,800 members of the Democratic Party who are on committees. But the number of registered Democrats in Monroe County is 193,000. So we are literally talking about the 1%. So I think that we should make sure that the will of the people is followed as opposed to the will of party elites.
Okay, and so let me at least try to sort of before, and we've already got feedback, and I haven't even mentioned a phone number. Listeners, if you want to weigh in, a lot of heat on this topic, 844-295-TALK, it's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, it's 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Robin, the argument for a brokered convention sounds something like this. If Bernie Sanders came in with 40% of the delegates and no one else could touch it, they could, as a group, make the case that Bernie Sanders was rejected by 60% and that that's a majority number and that therefore they should choose, the 60% should choose somebody else because they didn't want Bernie Sanders.
Right. And what did we do in the case of Bill Clinton? When he did not get a majority of the votes, he got a plurality. And we went ahead and gave the nomination to Bill Clinton. I think what we're setting up for is a recipe for disaster. If you try to deny the plurality, mm-hmm. Vote holder, the nomination, you are sending a message to all of the people who supported him that the party is in control and not the people.
Okay, Nicholas.
Joe Morelli won the 2018 primary with 45% of the vote, right? It was a crowded primary. The leading vote getter won the election. And furthermore, to Marv's point, there is a political calculus that the elites have to weigh. And none other than David Plouffe, who was a co-architect with David Axelrod of Obama's victory in 2008, spoke specifically about this hypothetical and issued a stern warning about what could happen to the party, especially, and I think this is informed by his perspective, as an Obama operative who, in Obama, won the presidency with the support of young people. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Sanders has enormous support among young people, which means it literally is pointing the way into the future of the party.
Can I read a little bit about what David Plouffe said? This is from Newsweek. He called this preposterous, that this could happen this way. The former Obama campaign manager said the idea that some Democrats would choose a contested convention over supporting Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is preposterous. He worked on Obama's 2008 campaign and ridiculed all discussion among Democrats that party members or opponents of Sanders should push for a brokered convention. He says it would show that young Americans that the power over the future of the party is not with them, but with the elite party holders. In other words, Nicholas, this is a man, David Plouffe, who knows something about getting the youth vote out, which Barack Obama did in 2008 more than just about anybody before him. And Plouffe says, look at the youth vote now for Sanders. It could destroy the hope that this is a party with a foundational future. Those young people could feel disenfranchised. Do you agree with that?
Well, And I worked very, very hard to help Obama win that election. As a progressive, you know, Robin and I are longtime progressive activists in this area, and we were very excited to support and work on behalf of Obama. And we've been on the Democratic Committee for 15 years and are still working to effect progressive change. So, you know, one of the things that excites us about Sanders' candidacy is that he has put together a coalition that goes all the way from old guard liberals who can tell stories about a brokered convention in the distant past to young people who were not even eligible to vote in the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. I will say in the last 2 years, something like 12,000 brand new Democrats have registered in Monroe County. So we're not even looking at the same electorate that we've had in the past. And if they vote, they can really move the needle.
Before we get Jane and Herman on the phones, let me just ask you briefly, as Sanders delegates, if this happened, if he went into the convention in July with a delegate lead and did not get the nomination, what would you do? Would you support the Democratic nominee?
Wow, that's a tough hypothetical, but we are pledged delegates for Sanders, and so we are going to the convention to cast our votes for Sanders. And if he is the lead vote getter, I do not understand why he would be contested for the nomination.
Nicholas?
Well, so let's talk about how this would look. The pledged delegates would cast their votes on the first ballot. And if Senator Sanders or, Marv's candidate,
Elizabeth
Warren,
Nick can't even
who
say
has,
her name.
Did you see that?
I did.
She has
a minute.
I did look up how many delegates. She has 8 so far, I think. But on the first ballot, if a majority isn't attained, then it goes to a second ballot. And why would we change our votes? We were pledged for Sanders. What would happen on that second ballot is exactly what Senator Sanders mentioned in the answer to the question that was posed at the debate. The superdelegates would cast their votes and subvert the will of the plurality of delegates representing the voters who sent them to the convention in Milwaukee. That's what would happen.
I understand. So I'm asking you, if that happens, what do you then do as a voter in November?
Oh, as a voter, this is interesting. This notion that aggrieved Sanders supporters then changed their vote after he lost the nomination in 2016 is a bit of a myth. It has been studied. And actually, there was a much higher percentage of aggrieved Clinton voters who voted for McCain in 2008 than there were aggrieved Sanders supporters who voted for Trump in 2016. So what Sanders would have to do, or, whoever the presidential nominee is, they are going to have to overcome and engender additional support as Obama did. Obama won the presidency. Mm-hmm. Even though there were aggrieved voters who supported his primary opponent and then switched their votes to McCain.
I guess I'm suggesting that this is different. 2016, Sanders supporters felt like this thing was preordained for Hillary Clinton to begin with. That is not the same as a brokered convention in which the candidate who gets the most votes and delegates doesn't then get the nomination. And I don't think I would be surprised to see much larger numbers this time. Say, sit out, do something else. I don't know.
I think any candidate that emerged from a brokered convention would have a legitimacy problem that would tamp down enthusiasm. So if the Democratic Party were to choose to broker the convention as opposed to go with the candidate with the greatest plurality of the vote, I think they are risking a huge enthusiasm gap. And we had a smaller enthusiasm gap, I think, in 2016 that resulted in us losing that election. And so, again, Democrats would ignore the will of the people at their own peril.
Marv, if your candidate, here's another scenario. Elizabeth Warren continues an upward trend in the polls, wins some states, makes some gains, doesn't go into the convention with the lead, but let's say it's Sanders at 40, Warren at 34, most of the other candidates split the rest and have dropped out. Would you feel like if Elizabeth Warren then emerges as the nominee, that Sanders and his supporters have a right to feel, you know, sort of aggrieved and sort of disenfranchised?
It's a great question. For somebody that ran for county ledge and lost by some votes, you know, it's only human that you would feel a certain way about, you know, how the turnout happens. But again, the end game is that whoever comes out of the Democratic process to go against Donald Trump, for me and for those in my family that are voters, that's the end game, is somebody coming out of the Democratic Party that is going to beat Donald Trump. So all of this is great fodder as far as conversation of how far they are different than one another or similar. I'm loving this process because it's democracy. But at the same time, I want the best candidate out of this Democratic Party to go against Donald Trump and beat him, because we are in dire straits with him in office. And if he gets a second term with nothing to lose, he's going to make things a lot worse in our country. And so I want Elizabeth to be the one, because that's why I stepped in to back her. But at the same time, I don't see a loss with the pool of candidates that are running in the Democratic group, because there are some strong perspectives that they bring that are real issues to people.
Your priority is winning.
My priority is winning.
Well, on that subject, let's get to some phone calls. Jane in Rochester first. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi, thanks, Evan. You took my point when you said that Sanders is winning by 40%, that means 60% of the electorate didn't choose him as their first choice. And I think it's important to remember that this electorate is a self-selected pool of people that are very much committed to the Democratic Party. And, you know, number one, Bernie's not a Democrat, so it's not surprising that he wouldn't go with the rules. But the second thing is that if we were to have a ranked choice primary where people chose their first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice, and then if their first choice weren't the one, who would their votes be reallocated to? I believe everybody's second choice is Elizabeth Warren, and she can win. And I don't think it's fair for the Sanders people to demand the win in those three states, early states, weren't really representative of the country. And to say that he's winning in a small pool, not the ocean.
So, Jane, let me, before I let them address some of that, let me just kind of address with you a couple of points there. First of all, these were similar arguments made 4 years ago when people like Ross Douthat, conservative columnist for The New York Times, was saying, don't worry, Never Trumpers. As soon as the pool thins out, Donald Trump is nobody's second choice. He's got his base of support, but everybody else doesn't want him. Well, it turns out he was more of a second choice for a lot of Republican voters and became very popular. And we saw Bernie Sanders, by the exit polling in Nevada, win the moderates. Bernie Sanders was the winner in a plurality of the self-described moderate voters in Nevada. I guess I'm just saying it's not impossible that Bernie Sanders is a lot of voters' second choice, but I don't know the polling on that.
It's not impossible, but I think the process should work itself out so that state by state, the party organizations can come to terms with what their voters want. And I think it's important to wait until after Super Tuesday to see who's really, quote unquote, winning. And the beauty of a ranked choice primary is that people then are not sniping at each other about how they're different. They're collaborating with each other to talk about how we as Democrats all agree on the things that we need to do together to defeat Donald Trump. It's not like 4 years ago when Trump was, you know, shooting people off the stage one by one.
Jane, thank you. And I don't know if it was Jane's phone call or just the subject, but all of a sudden the entire switchboard is on fire. We haven't even gotten to why Marv's here. Marv thinks that it's time to talk about Elizabeth Warren's surge.
But I love Jane's comment, though, because that is really what's important here, is that you having your rank of who all is your first and second choice. because the end choice is Donald Trump if we don't get somebody in line that's going to beat him.
But the convention rules are not ranked choice.
Right. So why not look at that? We look at everything else to amend to make things work. If the people choose that they would like this process, then we should look at doing that.
Right. But that's a hypothetical that is not going to occur in July. So I think what we risk when we talk about, you know, the conventional wisdom of who can win and who's electable is that we're considering perspectives that are not that are the party elites. The conventional wisdom of Washington insiders was wrong about Obama. It was wrong about Trump. And it's currently contradicted by the actual voter data when it comes to Sanders. For 5 years, the polls have shown that Sanders beats Trump in a head-to-head matchup. And in a recent Emerson poll, just this month, it showed Sanders was the only Democratic candidate to beat Trump in a head-to-head matchup. The only one. The notion that in November, you know, a voter turnout to vote Sanders will somehow, not result in down ballot races benefiting from him being the top vote getter is one that's not supported by the current data.
But I think there's a lot of voices that are not a part of that, as you were saying, the elite. You know, we got a lot of young folk out here that are rallying behind Sanders as well as Warren, but they weren't always voters. And so there's still people out there who are looking and watching this thing from their chairs at home, and they're registered, but they're not motivated yet. So we can say those that go out and vote all the time are the ones speaking for everyone. They're not. They're just the ones that got up and went out and did that vote.
And I think that's precisely my point.
Right.
That, you know, we are talking about a very small sliver of the electorate. These are the party elites who are giving us these opinions on whether these candidates are electable. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was at the rally, the Sanders rally at Queensbridge Park.
Okay. We were at the rally.
Yes, we were. We were both at the rally. That was 27,000 people.
Right. In his backyard. Yeah, I mean, he's a New Yorker. He's
right,
at home.
Right.
You're going to get that love.
But Tacoma, that was 17,000 people.
Okay.
So I think you have to deny what you're seeing with your very eyes to say that Sanders is somehow not electable.
You know, he also won the satellite caucuses in Iowa.
Yes.
Decisively. And those were novel. You know, those were bringing new people into the system. And to Jane's point, you know, if we just had Iowa and New Hampshire as data points, I would agree with her saying that the election results to date aren't representative. But Nevada is the most diverse state in the country.
Absolutely.
And we're still skipping and over Carolina right now.
Performed it.
You got a black and brown state that right now should be the first state. When we start talking about,
everybody agrees this process is about to change,
right.
Unless you know, absolute cronyism reigns, because this has been such a mess.
Right.
But,
But let's talk about South Carolina, because Biden had a 15-point lead. He enjoyed a 15-point lead over Bernie Sanders at one point, and now they're pulling neck and neck. So
Warren is at 5%.
Absolutely, absolutely. So when we talk about who has the support of black and brown voters, that is Sanders. Most of Sanders' supporters are actually people of color.
All right, so let me just jump in here, because if you're on the phone, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a little fine point on who can build a coalition, and then after our only break, we're just going to rip through your phone calls and feedback. But Robin is making a point that I think has been often ignored in sort of the punditry, which is this. You cannot win. First of all, you can't win, period, but you certainly can't win in the Democratic Party if you can't build coalitions, diverse coalitions. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think we probably have enough data to say it would be shocking if Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar could do that, just based on what has happened, how much exposure they've gotten, where they've tracked. Joe Biden could. There's a path. You could conceive of that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Bernie Sanders could. Elizabeth Warren, perhaps. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody else. Let me back up and say, based on the polling and the endorsements of many African-American mayors, perhaps Michael Bloomberg. And I wish you could have a camera on the Wilt's reactions. Just that Marv is laughing at that. The Wilt's look like
sickened.
I know. I understand.
Well,
but I'm just
we were in Albany a few weeks ago, so we got to see the humongous campaign office that he opened, right steps from the Capitol.
I'm just talking about where the polling is. So, Marv,
yes,
that's where it's getting late for Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Can she show, do you honestly believe, we're at the point now where Senator Warren can show she can coalition build in the next 2 weeks, win some states on Super Tuesday,
right,
do well, better than Nicholas is talking about the polling showing in South Carolina,
right,
and then show that she, too, can build a coalition? Because if she can, it's over for her.
This is politics and anything can happen. We all sat at home stunned when Trump won, right? A lot of people said, oh, he's losing. He's not going to get it. And it, we woke up the next morning saying, what happened? So I can't sit here and in good conscience go with the facts, when it's just numbers. And numbers can get manipulated depending on who's reporting them, right? So for me, it's a matter of the ground game. When you get to South Carolina, how are they looking at these particular candidates and how they're going to impact their bottom line? And so Elizabeth has just as much a shot as anybody else out there, and that's why I'm still supporting her.
So substantively, give me your 30-second case when you meet voters. I still don't know. This far into the process, it's hard to believe, but there are people who don't know. Why Elizabeth Warren, not Bernie Sanders? Why?
Because Elizabeth Warren is coming off organic to a lot of voters. You know, we talk about the underserved. I won't call our community, when I speak of black and brown community, as minorities, because there's nothing minor about us. We're the global majority.
Mm-hmm.
And right now you see a lot of things taking place in our community with the criminal justice reform, the legalization of marijuana, because of all these war on drug laws that took place in the 80s. She's talking about some substantive things that are addressing those issues. And for many people of different age groups within that black and brown community, that's major. And Bernie had that opportunity a while back. And there's some things that people in New York City know that don't resonate when it's organic about him saying, I'm going to do that. She's saying it and she comes across believable. That's why I say she still has a shot in the game.
All right, let me turn to Robin Wilt, Nicholas Wilt. At this point, I know you've made the case for Bernie Sanders, but for those who say Elizabeth Warren is in that direction, yes, she is an avowed capitalist, but she is a more progressive choice. She's the safer choice. You don't believe it. You believe Bernie Sanders will win. Why not Warren and why Sanders?
For me, follow black women. Follow marginalized communities. Who has the most support among those communities? It is a Sanders camp. It is a Sanders camp. I think that we agree that most Americans oppose corporate money's control of our elections. Most Americans support single-payer health care. Most Americans oppose our interventionist foreign policy and our many wars. Most Americans accept the consensus on global warming and the climate crisis and want serious action. Most Americans distrust bankers who keep crashing our economy and the neoliberal trade deals that have resulted in the shrinking of the middle class. And the list goes on and on. Sanders is doing well because people are tired of the same old message. He has invigorated a whole new base of voters. And we cannot risk losing a whole generation of voters because we're saying that it's not their time. It's not their time for justice.
You're hearing Robin Wilt. Nicholas Wilt is here, delegates for Senator Bernie Sanders. Marvin Stefferson is delegate for Senator Elizabeth Warren. And your many phone calls coming up after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, we talk about LGBTQ history and how it relates to our community today. Social justice, history, political and social change. The subjects is part of the Rainbow Dialogues that are coming your way this weekend, the third annual. We're going to talk about what the Rainbow Dialogues are and what they are designed to do coming up in our next hour. We're going to get as many of your comments as we can here, and let's move fast. Danielle in Rochester is next. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I am a 30-year-old voter in Rochester, and I have a different opinion about this. I I would feel very disenfranchised if the candidate with the most delegates did not end up getting the nomination at the national convention. I would also feel like I'm already on the brink from, you know, a little PTSD from our last major presidential election of feeling like my vote doesn't count anymore. And that would definitely push that into that direction where I would feel like my word, my vote, my needs are not being met, not being heard, not being valid. You know, I hear a lot talking about how let's defeat Trump. I don't disagree with that. But in order for me to want to accept anyone else who would get an election or a nomination, I would need to know that they're going to have my back, my interests, my children's welfare, things that matter to me on a daily basis to try and win back some of that trust that would be taken from me.
Danielle, thank you. So I know that the Wilts understand that sentiment.
Absolutely.
Are you worried about the future of the party if voters like Danielle feel disenfranchised?
I am absolutely worried about the future of the party. If we fail to include the voices of this fledgling movement that has shown so much promise. Again, Danielle's about 30, and she's voted in previous elections, and already she's suspicious. She's suspicious that the party actually doesn't want to incorporate her voice. And so if we were to do something like broker a convention where Bernie Sanders got the majority of the delegates, and then we give it to another nominee, that would send that whole fledgling, you know, voter base fleeing this party.
And let's emphasize, this is a hypothetical, and the objective of the Sanders campaign, of course, is to go to Milwaukee with a majority of the pledged delegates.
We're working our hardest to do that.
We're doing our best.
But, I don't want it to be lost that, the narrative is not that Warren is looking to take the candidacy without having the numbers. And so I'm hearing the Wilton, I'm hearing the young lady that was just on, and I too agree. If you get the numbers necessary to win, then you should be the selection. But for the same thing is that we're not just trying to get the person that's most popular in position to run against Donald Trump. We're trying to get also somebody that is going to be able to beat him. And so there's a lot of science to this thing. The end game should be the numbers make the determination.
But you're saying the Warren campaign is trying to win outright. You're not doing what the Bloomberg campaign's doing, which is sort of
buy your way in. No.
Well, I didn't say buy your way in.
I said it.
Okay.
but actually already building the case sort of privately and almost publicly to broker the convention now.
Right.
You're saying the Warren campaign is trying to win this thing, to rally, to start winning states.
She's trying to play the game the same way as the Sanders campaign is, and that is motivate the people to come out, support her, and win by numbers. And so that's what we're doing. When they came here in New York, we went out knocking on doors in cold weather, and they're doing that all across the country. And every place that she can get the delegates to go out and do that, to hold the petitions for her. So I just don't want to make it sound like Warren is with
the plan is to win at the convention. No, I get you.
Yeah.
I just want to say that sometimes it's not as difficult as we think.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not rocket science. Maybe the most popular candidate actually is the most electable.
Yeah, it could be.
Imagine that.
It could be.
Imagine that.
But if it's not.
Ben from Rochester next. Go ahead, Ben.
Hi, I'm actually a Warren supporter.
Amen.
But my thought is her and Sanders' campaign have a lot of overlapping interests beyond just defeating Trump. What if she went to Sanders now and they hammered out an agenda together and declared themselves a ticket right now? They would have a really broad base of support. It would be very inclusive. I know it's unprecedented, but it would also be really radical.
Yeah.
And I, I think that it would change the way the executive office could work down the road as well, if they already decided this is how they're going to work together.
But, Ben, who's on the top of the ticket? You want to see Warren the nominee, but who would be on the top of the ticket in this scenario?
I do. But given the fact that Sanders has more delegates at this point, I think his supporters would be a lot really angry if Warren were at the top of the
If he's not at the top of the ticket. I take the point. So, Ben, thank you for that, Ben, and I want to let our guests kind of weigh in on that. This is something that comes up in a lot of different campaigns where someone who is, you know, maybe not ahead or looking for a splash, there's this talk that, well, they ought to announce right now that they're going to run together. You know, in 2008 it was McCain should announce Joe Lieberman on his ticket. You know, before they even get to the convention, there'll be the unity ticket. There was talk that Joe Biden should put Mitt Romney on the ticket after Mitt Romney voted to convict in the Senate trial recently, or that that Joe Biden should try to put Stacey Abrams on the ticket. No idea if Stacey Abrams would want to be on that ticket. But those kind of announcements are the idea being it's a splash, it's powerful. It's usually what happens when you're behind. I don't see why a Bernie Sanders would do that from being in a position of strength here. But what Ben's saying is, unify, you know, Warren, Sanders, make it a progressive ticket, do it now. Robin?
Well, again, I don't know why Bernie would do that from the lead. If that's something that Warren would consider, I can't stop her from doing that. I think that our process is such that people go for the win. People will go for the win, and people, or they hold out for something. Yeah. I wish it were a different process. I wish that something like Ben was proposing was actually something that would be considered by any of the candidates. But you know, as you saw in the question that was posed at the debate, you know, Sanders is in an extremely strong position. And so for him, and I don't think that Sanders would ever ask somebody to drop out and be his running mate. That's not something. So if it's something that Elizabeth Warren decided, I think that it would be unprecedented, mm-hmm. and it would really be a nice thing to see, but I don't think it's
just
really
briefly
feasible.
How likely is Elizabeth Warren as a running mate possibility for Bernie Sanders?
I can't speak
not
for
even
the
thinking
campaign.
Ahead. Not even thinking. Not, no, Nicholas? Not even.
It's
such a long way down the line. Yeah.
Well, and you know, we had a vigorously contested primary in 2008, and Clinton was the Secretary of State, not the vice presidential nominee.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's essentially above my pay grade to try to weigh in on that type of thing.
I could see Warren in the cabinet.
No, I hear that. Yeah. All right, let's get Herman next. Go ahead, Herman.
Hi, Robin and Nick, and hi Evan.
Hi, Herman.
He's ahead of Marv, too. Marv's here.
Okay, hi, Mark, but I don't know you. I know all the others.
You don't know me now.
Okay. First of all, I have a question, and then I have some comments. My question is these polls that show that Bernie wins head-to-head with Trump, are those the popular vote or the Electoral College vote? Because my concern is, I've heard that the freshman Democrat representatives who flipped Republican seats in some of the swing states and some of the red-leaning states are very concerned that not only that Bernie wouldn't have a good chance of winning in those states which are needed in order to get an Electoral College majority, but that would imperil their own reelection. And many of them are feeling that way. And, you know, I don't independently know that, but I would think that they know their states and their districts. They know how they had to run to flip those districts. And so I'm curious to know whether there are any polls that show the Electoral College, because as we saw very painfully in 2016, the candidate can handily win the popular vote and lose the Electoral College. And that's my question. Then I have some comments. Do you want to answer the question first, or should I make my comments first?
Well, let's do this. Let's just briefly hit that point. I agree with Herman, generally speaking. National polling doesn't do me much good anymore.
Right.
You know, we could see a 5 million vote deficit in the popular vote. There's about 6 or 7 states that matter. And I don't mean that flippantly.
Mm-hmm.
That is the system now.
Right.
That's what's going to happen in November, and that's where we ought to be looking. When you look at those states, typically Sanders, sometimes Bloomberg, sometimes Biden are at the top of those in contending against Trump. It's early. These things are really
yes.
fluid, but I think it's fair to say that's where our gaze should be, maybe not at the national.
Well, I think that's a system we have, you know, with the
I'm not electors. Saying the system shouldn't change.
Right,
I'm saying that currently.
Right. I think that's a system we have. And I do think that Sanders polls extremely well in those states that are critical to a Democratic win.
Okay. So, Herman, some comments. Go ahead. Make them tight.
Okay. I want to make clear that I'm undecided. I just want to make sure that Trump gets defeated. I'm not trying to advocate for one or the other candidate. They're all flawed in one way or another, either in terms of their electability or in terms of their being qualified for the presidency. And I agree with Jane about the ranked choice voting. I think that would be great at the primary level. But I just want to point out that Sanders' front runner status was greatly enhanced by the large number of moderates that are in the race. So the moderate vote is being split between several. Just think of the New Hampshire results. If you added up any two or three of the moderates, they would have the won over Sanders. So, you know, so it's a little bit misleading, and I hate to disagree with my very dear friends, Robin and Nick, but or to be slightly critical of you, but I think it's really misleading to talk about the will of the people and the people versus the elites, unless Bernie or whoever the candidate is you support actually has a majority. His frontrunner status early on is very much depends on how the others are split among each other, and that's another thing I've heard is that in the upcoming primary and perhaps in some of the earlier primaries in the open primaries, Republicans are planning to vote for Bernie because they see him as the one that...
Yeah, let me jump in there, Herman, because I don't have evidence that that's true. You hear this stuff all the time in the open primaries of one party's going to go and they're going to go vote for, you know, Roger Rabbit or somebody
right.
in there to kind of put in. I don't see the evidence of that.
Well, I think what we saw in Nevada is really telling. We saw Bernie winning moderates. We saw Bernie winning independents.
So you don't buy Herman's framing that there's a moderate lane, and right now the moderate lane is bigger in the Democratic Party. You don't buy that?
I don't buy that frame.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Biden, if you combine their votes and they're more than Sanders, that doesn't trouble you.
That didn't happen in Nevada.
That is true that it didn't happen in Nevada.
Right.
And we're going to see in the South Carolinas of the world, and then
exactly.
frankly on Super Tuesday.
Right, right.
But you don't buy the moderate versus progressive lane idea.
Because we have a case study now in Nevada where the moderates and the independents went for Bernie.
Well, and in a crowded primary here in Monroe County, how do you decide who among the second and lesser vote getters should be the person? Like the top vote getters, whether it's the two top vote getters when two slots are available, or the top vote getter if one slot is available, the top vote getters advance to the general election. That's how it works.
Marv, do you buy the idea that there's a moderate lane and then a more progressive lane?
I do buy there is a lane, but for me, again, it comes back to who do these candidates resonate with, and will they come out and support him at that voting day? Right now, the media drives a lot
right.
of things, so the numbers keep fluctuating going back and forth. And that's why I really don't get too moved or too excited when I see those things, because I know that people are, fickle. The sun comes out, everybody gets out and goes vote. It's cold. Nobody shows up to the polls. So right now, Elizabeth is doing some things to motivate a lot of young voters that Sanders is motivating. She's tackling issues that are close to a demographic that had not been or felt like they were disenfranchised before. You know, you talk about criminal justice, you talk about student loan. I got two kids in college. Yeah. So she's talking about things that resonate for me.
Well, he's talking a lot of the same things.
Absolutely.
And that's why I said they're not that far apart.
No, I hear that.
And that's my one and two.
That's why I think that's why I think right now Democrats are going to choose whether they want someone who is progressive and sees capitalism as sort of an existential threat that has a history of, frankly, being linked to systems of oppression, or someone who sees capitalism as reformable. That's the biggest difference I see as Sanders and Warren, which might be its own hour.
Well, it's got to be a blend. You got to have a blend.
But here's what I will say, Marv.
Yes.
I understand the whole idea that Democrats in the past dated Dean and married Kerry. I remember that phrase. But usually when they've done that, they've moved back towards something more moderate or centrist. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's happening this time.
Right.
I do think the media sort of closes things down too early. Mm-hmm. We got to let a lot of states vote, but they're about to do that.
Yes, they are.
And so you look excited by that. Right. I'll tell you who's really excited by that. The people who see all the polling in the Sanders camp are really excited. We're going to see in a week. But I'm a skeptic that the party could survive a brokered convention. I think political pundits love that stuff because it's good stories.
Right. Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. Also, caveat, I'm wrong about everything. Marv, it's great to have you. Thank you for having me. Marv Stephenson's a delegate for Senator Elizabeth Warren. Robin Wild and Nicholas Wilt are delegates for Senator Bernie Sanders. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And again, we'll talk to Robin soon about her candidacy for Congress, among many other things. More Connections coming up next.